Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Simon Rollison, Director of Ethereum. We'll dive into the latest operational updates from their Moroccan Azrar Copper Gold Project, where significant progress has been made, including high-grade copper, silver and gold discoveries at priority targets like Tifrit, Ugri and Izaza. Simon will share insights into the project's potential, the ongoing exploration strategy and how this critical metal-focused company is positioning itself for growth in the evolving resource sector. Welcome back, Simon. It's been a while.
No, it has. Good to be back.
Absolutely, yeah. So let's start with those priority targets. I mean, the Azrar Copper Gold Project has delivered promising results, including this 3.8-kilometre strike length identified at the Tifrit target. Could you just elaborate on the significance of this discovery and how it impacts your broader exploration strategy, please?
So what we did this time around, Phil, was we looked at following up from some results that we had from an earlier program where we identified a couple of artisanal workings in the northeast of the project. These workings weren't like significant in size, but they're indication that there was something that was of interest for previous explorers to have a look at. So during that phase, we took a couple of samples and we had reasonable coppers at plus 1%, but we had up to half a gram of gold. So we looked at the structural trend and we sort of went to the south following this out and we had another couple of little gold hits. And then we put a channel sample in across the zone of quartz veining. And so that's the one that we reported yesterday where we had 9 meters at 0.8 grams per ton of gold. And I think it was like 0.68% copper. So that in itself is quite significant. And, you know, one of the intervals there was, I think, 70 centimeters, and that was nearly 3 grams per ton of gold, just under 3% copper. So, yeah, very encouraging. And when you look at the zone itself, it looks as if it's sort of trending around about 3.5 to 3.8 kilometers in length. You can sort of see it on some of the satellite imagery, the structural corridor passing through there. So I think it provides us now with a new exciting opportunity in Azrar, because previously we'd been sort of investigating the sedimentary hosted copper potential. But this with the gold, I think, is very significant. And so going forwards, what we want to do is sort of consider our options now at Azrar, because so far we've got these prospects within the project that we've identified and delineated. And I think, you know, we just need to do a sort of sensible exercise of weighting these and ranking them. And I think the fact that you have the gold and the copper together, that association is very attractive. So what we'd like to do is go back into the field. We purchased our own ground magnetometer earlier on in the year, get the team out there and just do a ground mag survey across the area of interest, this 3.8-kilometer zone. See if we can delineate the main structures that appear to be controlling these vein zones and fault zones that are hosting the mineralization. We could then follow that up with a quick bit of excavator type of trenching across the structures so we can get a better feel for the orientation of these features. But really, it's just to see if we can get ourselves some drill targets as fast as we can. Because, you know, with the projects, I think now's come the time where we've done a lot of the early homework. We've done a lot of mapping, a lot of sampling, and now these things have to be drill tested. And then you can make your decision, you know, does it go through to the next phase or do you move on to the other project?
I think it's safe to say from the RNS reading it that you kind of now shifted focus onto the key projects. There's four key projects. You've got Agdas, Azrar, Tatar and Jebel S. They're the four sort of like your high priority copper projects in Morocco now. There's also silver mentioned in the RNS as well, which kind of adds more to the value of the project in terms of finding a JV partner. So just talk us through that shift, because so some shareholders probably look at it and say, well, there's just too many assets within that, you know, the Moroccan portfolio. Is it 17 or something like that originally defined?
Yeah, we were up to that at one point in time. And I think, you know, you have to look at it from two aspects. There's the shareholder opinion that a small company with that number of projects is going to be stretched. But internally, you know, you've only got finite resources in terms of human resources and capital for exploration spend. So what we want to be able to do is to reduce the portfolio down to the projects that have prosperity, prospectivity and what we consider to be those four key projects. so that then we can, you know, keep our focus on these projects. And so what we've been doing is with Morocco, going through the assets that we held and looking at it and just put a list of criteria to tick off. So obviously prospectivity from initial reconnaissance and site investigation. If it's a project with just one license, that's not really of interest to anyone. If it's a couple of licenses, but they're well spread apart, it doesn't aid either, because, you know, what we've discovered through the conversations of the recent sort of months and the past year with potential partners who are interested in Morocco is that they're looking for contiguous land masses so they can have that sort of critical scale that if they came in and joined a project, if you've got 100 square kilometers, it makes more sense for them to do like either their airborne work or apply the scales of economy that they need. So another factor, of course, is the access and the infrastructure. So when you've got really poor access and you end up having to walk half the day just to get to the edge of the license, it's kind of like, that's not really for us. And so it's sort of just whittling it down, really.
I want to just talk about the nearby, the Tizert or Tizert copper mine, which I believe is developed and managed by Managem. How, just talk the listeners through the proximity and the sort of the geological similarities between that mine. Because you know, you just say it is remote, but actually it's relatively close in Moroccan terms, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. It's about 45 kilometers east of the Agdez project, and similar to the Tata project that we've got. They're all located down in the eastern Anti-Atlas. So Tizert is the development project. I'm not sure where they are in the sort of operations and getting it up into full-scale production, but it's the sedimentary-hosted copper. If I remember right, it's about 56 million tons at just over 1% copper, 10 grams or so of silver as the byproduct. But the geology that hosts the Tizert mineralization is identical in terms of age, stratigraphy, and setting to what we find on several of our projects. So we always refer to that as the analogy. And when we're looking for a Tizert style of mineralization, you're looking for some key parameters in terms of the age of the sediments. The setting tends to be proximal to these basement inliers. And we see the similar types of settings on the Tata project and some of the areas in Azra as well.
So Simon, if I remember right, when we were talking a couple of years ago now, it was Rio Tinto who first came to look at the copper assets that you had in Morocco, and then they were guided towards Rwanda. So how do you see these assets moving forward then? Is definitely the company's view to search out a joint venture partner for these four assets as you, you know, take them up the Lassonde curve?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we haven't shied away from that, and we've sort of made it known that, you know, our preferred model is to bring in a partner where the partner has the technical capabilities and the financial capability to advance the projects at a much quicker rate than we can at the moment. You know, we're a junior in the London market, and it's difficult to find the capital to go out and have multiple drill programs going at the same time. So, you know, the concept is that people come in, they can do an earn-in, similar to what we've done in Rwanda with Rio Tinto, and that will bring some money into the company. But the important thing is to accelerate the project exploration and evaluation so that these projects move forward faster.
Yeah, because I can almost feel it in your answers that as a geologist you want to get on with this and drill some of these targets, I presume.
Yeah, of course, because it's what it's all about, isn't it? Until you put that hole in the ground, you're never really going to know what you're dealing with. You've got to see things in that third dimension. You know, we did the drilling recently at Agdez, where we have the copper silver sort of hydrothermal structurally controlled play, and we picked up a couple of nice intersections through that scout drilling. Short program, but you know, we knew from conversations and we knew ourselves that to gain interest in these projects, you have to advance it past just the surface work, whether it be, you know, geophysics, mapping, or sampling. You have to start to have a view of the three dimension and getting some view on the continuity of what you're seeing on the surface. So, you know, we had a couple of nice intersections at Agdez. We had 3 meters at 1.6% copper with 101 grams per ton silver from the one area. That was very nice. And then to the south, a couple of kilometers, we put in another hole into another target. And I think that was 10 meters at 0.45% copper. So that was encouraging. But, you know, the thing is, we drilled a a short 1,000-meter program over what is quite a large area. So you still have a lot of opportunity out there to expand these zones, and there's a lot of room out there. Effectively, we were drilling one or two scout holes into a prospect.
Yeah, you're not getting, you're not going to get 100 grams of silver in every ton, obviously. But that would, if it was, that would be $90 or more, $100 of $100 ore without even the copper. So this would be incredible, wouldn't it? At over 3 ounces of silver per ton.
Yeah.
But it still amazes me though. Whenever we see it, you know, when people have to understand, even though we think this is a big figure, imagine a ton of rock and there's only like 3 ounces. I mean, I used to get my sweets in quarters. I don't know about you, but it's not even
little paper bag.
Not even a quarter of sweets, you know, not even a paper bag's worth of silver. But obviously it has incredible value, and obviously even more so if it's gold.
Well, look, I mean, I do something similar to you. You know, when we have these intersections or these trenches, I kind of look at the numbers and you sort of say to yourself, well, a couple of years ago, if you had 0.8 grams per ton of gold with a bit of copper, maybe not so interesting. But then you have to look at it in context of today's prices and where people think the prices are going to be going over the next 5, 10, 20 years. And you kind of say, well, that the value of that ton of rock is about $120. So that has to be considered economic. You know, you're going to get moderately good recovery rates on that. So it makes it exciting. And you know, with the drilling at Agdez, you know, you have 10 meters at 0.45% copper. In today's world, with the current copper prices, that's economic.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You just have to prove up that you got enough of it to take it forwards. And so the drilling was very encouraging because we had these nice intersections in different locations across Agdez. And it gives you that encouragement now to sort of plan going forwards, you know, how can we extend this out with some additional drilling, you know, drill below the intersections that we had, see if the mineralization extends further at depth, and then start tracing it along strike and sort of start working to increase the overall size of the project.
You've also got to be mindful of these things now as well, of where Morocco is in relation to Europe. You know, the scenario is copper becomes a critical metal, a critical asset to Europe. And, you know, Morocco's on its doorstep. So there's got to be some movement there, you would imagine, for grant assistance or for some sort of assistance in terms of Morocco and from the European Union. Have you looked into that at all?
No, we haven't at the moment. I mean, Morocco's an interesting one. It has all the right ingredients to be an ideal mining destination for companies to go in and look at. But we've seen over the last 2 years a lot of interest building in Morocco, but we haven't seen any of the mid-tier to the majors take that step into the country yet. There's a little bit of activity on the junior side. You know, there's probably four or five more companies on the ground operating than when we started two and a half years ago in Morocco. But I think that momentum's going to build because, you know, you have all the infrastructure in country. You've got the development of the car manufacturing sector and the electric cars. You've got the solar. You've got all the ingredients there are right. And you're so close to Europe. You've got all the trade agreements with Europe. It's just like an extension of mainland Europe now. And
You only just cross the strait there from come across Gibraltar Strait and you're there.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I just think that what's really needed is maybe a little bit of junior mining exploration success just to really pique people's interest. But it's going to be interesting because I'm going down to Marrakesh at the beginning of December. There's a small mining conference on, so I've not been to one down there before, just to see what the audience participation is like and what the sentiment and the view is on the ground. But yeah, unfortunately the timing of the conference in Marrakesh isn't the best because it sort of coincides with the events going on in London. There's the Resourcing Tomorrow in London.
We'll be down there. Yeah.
Are you going to go to the Resourcing Tomorrow, or it's a clash now?
It's a bit of a clash, but I'm going to be coming over to the UK on that week. So we're going to meet up with Charles. We've got a couple of meetings set up, so we'll have to catch up.
Yeah, we'll be at the Resourcing Tomorrow on the Wednesday and the Thursday. So yeah, maybe we can meet up for sure. That would be good. So, I mean, from the perspective of what happens next?
Well, look, on the ground, it's quite straightforward. We've got a very clear sort of focus and sort of approach that we want to follow now at ASRA. The same applies to Gibalet, where a couple of months ago, I think it was now, we put out an announcement with some encouraging continuation of the copper that we'd seen there before. And it's the same process. It's confirm the structures that are hosting the mineralization. We'll start by using the ground magnetics. We'll do some trenching, get the idea of the structure, and have drill targets ready in short order. And then there'd be both those projects will be drill ready. Agdez, we need to expand out of the drilling there. And Tata, we're still continuing with that sedimentary copper project. We've done a bunch of sampling recently, a lot of cross stratigraphy, geological mapping, and that's coming together. We're just waiting for a reinterpretation of the available historical airborne geophysical data and use that to guide us in, because it's such a big area as well, the Tata project. You know, I think we've covered about 30 kilometers of strike. What we want to use is available techniques and methods to just to zoom in now to smaller areas where we can just run some ground-based geophysical surveys over it. Again, just working towards as fast as we can, identifying drill targets for people.
But you're finding that strike at surface as well, I presume, in that particular situation.
On the Tata project, yeah. You can see the copper within the sediments all along the strike. It's quite incredible, really.
Okay. So are you going to be drilling either side of that strike to see if there is, you know, at depth that there is more copper, or it's going to be stick it through the strike and see what happens? I always say this, geologists, just to wind them up, we'll do a 90-degree drill straight through the strike.
Yeah, look, it's that's been done before, I'm sure. But it's an interesting one because it's effectively just a layer cake that's just tilted on its side. So you've got all the different layers and you're just drilling through the top of the cake and seeing if you intersect those right units below the surface. But, you know, Tata is obviously some way off still. We're more advanced and kind of ready to go at a different projects like Agdez or at Azra. And I think Gibalet's the same. And you know, Gibalet is the one just outside of Marrakesh anyway. And that's very straightforward. You know, the terrain there is very user-friendly. It's just gentle.
And those new copper zones you identified look pretty promising. I think it was like up to 9.25% copper return from it. It was like an isolated vein outcrop, wasn't it? Just talk us through how sort of interesting those results were, Simon.
Well, that came out of the Gibalet, what we call the sort of the western vein area. That has been followed in the past for about 3+ kilometers. It's not a continuous vein. It's obviously been sort of transected by some features that have broken it up. And what we've been looking at, because there's not a lot of outcrop other than the occasional vein outcrop, is how can we piece this all together? And I think, you know, the ground magnetics will help that. And so what we've seen is a number of sort of satellite or secondary veins splaying off the main zone. And it's where you have those intersections that you're going to get your nicest targets. So that's what we want to see if we can identify on the ground there. And then on Gibalet, we've got the eastern side of the project where we've got quite a nice density of veins coming together, carrying sort of reasonable grades as well. So I think, you know, we've now got ourselves where we want to be. You know, we've got a very clear roadmap in front of us. We know which projects we want to advance. We know what we want to do with the projects. You know, when we started off in Morocco, as you say, you know, we had quite a large portfolio of all these different assets. And now we've been able to like work our way through to find out what we think is the prime projects for us.
And as a question about Eterion as a whole, obviously we're coming to sort of fairly exciting time in terms of Rwanda as well. Just give the people a bit of an update of where we're at in terms of drilling and the Rio joint venture, if you can.
Sure. So with Rio, it's taken quite a bit of time to get to today. You know, a lot of permitting involved for water, talking to the communities. But I'm glad to say they started yesterday the first drill hole. So they are underway down on the HCK project, drilling into the HCK1. Pegmatite target, and hopefully, you know, sort of next week, the week after, we'll start to get some indications as to
that was the hill of what lies in the stood on them.
Yeah, you did go down there. I wasn't with you on that trip, but
no, you weren't there. But we stood on that hill with the Rio geologist, a lady, and she was showing us the pegmatites that had effectively washed out on the side of the hill. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing what sort of results they come up with, and I'm sure you are as well.
Oh no, absolutely. you know, all the indications from the work that's been done so far, looking at the geochemistry and the geology, you know, they're very favorable. But as with all things, you never know until you drill it, and then you'll see what you get. But, you know, it's one of those projects where, let's say, for instance, that Rio Tinto don't find what they're looking for. They don't find enough of what they're looking for. The project will revert back to us. And we do know that there's still a lot of tantalum and niobium in the form of the coltan sitting in that hillside, which is easily to extract and very washable.
So there's many ways to skin a cat, is what you're saying. The lithium works out great, but it has to be of a certain size, obviously, for Rio to want to progress the whole sort of scheme.
Yeah. Look, when we started engaging this process with Rio, you know, we sat down and thought, what are the pros and cons? And you know, it's very hard to see any downside. I mean, if Rio find what they're looking for, then that's the perfect sort of scenario. If they don't, because there's not a high enough grade or there's not enough size or whatever the reason, you know, we get all the data back. And if there is lithium in there and it's not of the size and scale that suits their book, we get that back. And I'm sure there'll be someone who'd be more than willing to come in and partner with us on that. And if they don't find a significant lithium in terms of the spodumene, then we get it back anyway. And we continue the path that we originally started off in Rwanda. And that was looking at setting up simple gravitational wash plants where we can put the weathered kaolinized pegmatite through the wash plant and recover the siderite that you find in these pegmatites and also the tantalum. So there's not really much downside on that particular project. But ideally, you know, you obviously want to go with the first option where Rio drill or they find what they're looking for, they get all excited and drill a lot more and can progress it.
And then buy you out with a big check.
Would be very nice.
Alternatively, as I had a conversation with Charles, I think, even when we were in Rwanda, that, you know, maybe they want 30, 40 million tons, I think it is. And let's say there's only 20 million tons. Well, if you were to get 30% of a buyout on 40 or 50 million tons or 100% minus someone else coming in on 20 million tons, it might not actually be that much different. Might take a lot longer, but wouldn't be that much different in economics. So I think, as you said, there isn't really any downside on this. And you also have the other assets that you can get, as in the tin and the tantalum and so on and so forth. So, yeah. I think what they have done, though, which you couldn't have done purely on finance, is when we went there, you know, HCK1, but there's also HCK1 as HCK2, which was the hill over the other side. And they've expanded that area, I think, quite significantly in terms of they're looking for things. So, you know, all of that has allowed you to benefit from that in whichever way the chips fall, if you like.
Oh, definitely, because, you know, they've been able to throw a lot of manpower onto the project. So once they got onto the ground, they were very active, multiple field teams out there sampling, mapping, you know, putting the whole picture together. So, and you know, this is what, it goes back to what I said at the beginning of the conversation, was that, you know, our view is that if we can bring partners in, they can fast track the development and evaluation of licenses and assets around either Morocco or where are we decide to work. And it's a great tool for us because we are limited in what we can do in terms of financial clout.
Yeah, good. Well, good luck with the Morocco assets. I hope we get a JV in the not too distant future as you try and progress those assets. And we look forward to hearing from you in the probably weeks, if not months, for what's going on in Rwanda and the lithium.
Yeah. I hope so. It'd be good to come back again with some positive news on Rwanda, hopefully.
On that note, we'll say Simon Rollison, Director of Iterion, thanks very much for appearing on the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Simon.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.